Welcome to the EverydayDrinkers.com podcast. Today we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to talk with a tequila maker. This will be somebody that we can learn a little bit more about tequila, appreciate their brand, and hopefully this could be provide a good alternative, a good segue into the next audio episode where Doug, Kate, Dave, and all of our friends get together and review different types of alcohol. So hopefully you will enjoy what we've got going. And if you do, please write me, dshomer at everydaydrinkers.com. I'd love to know what you think of the interview style, the flow, if you'd like to see more in the future, because we have one we'd like to do with Brave Spirits next. So I'd like to know, what do you guys think? Is this valuable? Do you find it fun? Is it a good entertainment audio podcast? Thanks. Here we go.
Hi, my name is Iñaki Orozco. I'm the CEO and founder of Riazul Premium Tequila, a brand new brand launched about 7 months ago in Texas, but rapidly making its way to other markets. At Riazul, we pride ourselves of covering the whole process of tequila making with a lot of care and love. It all starts with the inception of the process to where we only harvest the agave plants that have the highest levels of sugar in them, known as Brix, which is the ratio of sugar to water in the plant.
Okay.
Furthermore, in the distillery process, we are very lucky that the infrastructure built in this distillery has the variability and the flexibility to mix up modern technology with ancient handcrafted processes to where we can achieve a lot of different notes and a lot of different blends in our brands. Furthermore, to give our brands unique profiles, we do things that other brands do not do. In case of our Añejo, we age our stuff for 24 months in French oak barrels rather than American oak, and we use barrels that have been used to cure cognac and brandy. And so I guess we're very committed to come out with a brand that not only offers a high-quality juice, but also is poised to show an image, to convey an image towards the sexy and the fashionable, because we think that tequila is heading that direction. So we're proud, as I said, to bring forward a brand that captures a couple of value propositions in that it has a sexier, attractive package and ties in with a very nice selection of tequilas that are made with a lot of love and passion.
So what is the big difference between the American oak versus the French oak? Like, is there, without the cognac, or like, I know bourbons and other things have been used, what is the, like, a distinct property that you'd get different from the American versus a French oak?
Amazingly, Derek, French oak holds its oak a lot more than American oak. And so what you can see, a typical thing that you can see in comparison is that the tequilas that have been aged in American oak are a little over-oaked.
Oh, okay.
And so,
okay.
Yeah, so that in retrospect, that in a nutshell is basically what the French oak does compared to the American oak.
Yeah, because there's even in, like, I do a lot of wine reviews, and I listen to wine reviews and wine shows, and a lot of people complain that an over-oaked spirit in general, wine or even bourbon or tequila, it's like a makeup. It covers some of the other flavor profiles that you would be able to get from the spirit itself.
Absolutely. And as consumption trends are evolving to where the enthusiast or the connoisseur is a lot more knowledgeable what they drink, they do not want that over oakiness in there. You know, they want the true blends and the true flavors of the agave and then of the tequila itself.
There's this stigma that I had in college and other people I know have had. And even now, I've got like 25 different brands of tequila. And when people come over, I'm like, look, I want to show you some of these different tequilas. And everybody's like, oh, look, I don't want a headache. I don't want to hallucinate. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a common misconception. It's like the misconception with absinthe. Like, you're going to get high or whatever because it's just weird. And they're going to get headaches. And I think a lot of these people have been dealing with like the Jose Cuervo Especial, like the Mixto tequila, which in my opinion isn't really a tequila. It's like a grain alcohol with agave flavors somewhat and caramel color. Do you have anything against, like, do you have to fight that stigma?
Well, I guess it's part of the unfolding and the way that tequila has established itself in the U.S. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a fight that we have to overcome. But I guess that with high quality tequilas out there, not only ours but others, it's become a little easier, if you will. But you're absolutely right. I mean, if we go back to the 1920s or 30s when tequila was first introduced into the U.S. After the Prohibition. Tequila made its way to the U.S., I want to say the mixto stuff, the not-so-good stuff.
Right.
And it has progressed just like it did in Mexico. You know, in the 1940s, tequila was only drank by blue-collar employees in Mexico, and it made its way to a quality beverage. I mean, hallucinations and all that associated to tequila are unfounded, if you will. The headaches, yes, because that's what happens when you mix and the agave nectar with other stuff, just like sugarcane alcohol.
Right.
And so, but now, as I said, with the progression that tequila's having, and agave, believe it or not, being one of the purest sweeteners out there, because it's not refined like sugar,
right,
and it has some enzymatic properties that really mesh well with the digestive system that do not suck the lifeblood out of our system, dehydrate us overnight, and then it makes us have a headache the next day. So believe me when I say that if you stick to good tequila all night long, the most that could happen to you the next day is probably have a dry mouth.
Right, which is, I think people are slowly, I kind of contributed to the marketing force today with the tequila brands in general. Of course, started with Patron, which is not really my favorite. I find it to be overpriced for the quality. And it kind of has like a weird aftertaste, like a burnt rubber tire to me. But what they have seems to have done is they brought like this momentum where you go into a liquor store now. And the reason I like to pull out different brands that I really enjoy is there's so many. It's just racks in shelves of crazy bottles, you know, like shotguns. Some have these big towers on them. And I think there is the positive side of it where we're starting to understand, hey, look, there's all this other stuff out here that's not this mixto.
No, you're absolutely right. And I guess we do have to credit Patron for something. And that is a vision of the people behind this project to opening the premium segment of tequila in this country, if you will. Because Cuervo was not poised to do that at all. I mean, they introduced their mixto and they were having a great success with it because people were really mixing it and shooting it. And so they were like, why even spend the time and effort to send these guys the high quality stuff if tequila is regarded as a low class beverage that's only worth for shooting or mixing, you know?
Right.
But this guy obviously experienced a better tasting tequila. And so he said, well, tequila is well known to where we can get away with something, you know. If I agree with the price point of Patron, that's a different story. But at least you got to give them credit for opening this whole new can of worms, which has allowed players like ourselves with a true good agave nectar tequila to come out there, establish our value proposition, and trying to get people to really get the culture and the feel of this high quality beverage.
Right, which is a big deal for me, is that you get, it just feels like it's more, organic or natural, but there's almost like a terroir in some of the añejos especially. And even with your silver, which is quite amazing, in the fact that I consider the silvers to be the most difficult, because
right,
they're naked. They're like out there and they're like, look, this is the essence of what we're made. We're going to make one that's got more complex flavors or different dynamics. But if this isn't going to be good, then nothing will. And
you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The silver is a foundation for all your other products. And as I said, the process here is key. In harvesting a good agave plant is key. The terroir comparison is not far off. I mean, a good wine, a good tequila is like a good wine. You know, I mean, you're talking about a natural resource in agave that takes 8 years to mature and 8 years of nurturing through the soil. And if you have good soil conditions, you have good climate conditions, you're going to have a plant that's prone to deliver a high-quality beverage, then you're going to be able to tweak with different pre-bottling techniques or whatever it is you do to attach your unique profile to it, which is what we've been doing at Riazul, you know. But yeah, tequila is definitely making a firm statement to the elegancy, to the delicacy, you know, and people are experiencing them and they're liking what they're seeing and they're experiencing new brands.
And I think the other thing that's I've noticed a lot lately, which is very, I don't want to say odd, it was almost like I could have predicted it, is when you look at a lot of different organic brands that are using, you know, they try and do the sugar substitutes in the honeys. And it seems like a lot of organic brands, be it breads to other sweetening or sweeter objects, are using the agave as an alternative to sugar, which seems like it could almost help the market because people can relate and go, oh, look, this is like that stuff I bought at Trader Joe's, or, you know,
yeah.
It's becoming more culturally understood what
You're
this agave
right.
is.
You're absolutely right. And that goes back to what we were talking about before, about the agave being one of the purest sweeteners out there, you know, and having these enzymatic properties. Agave nectar is now the way to go when you're preparing a margarita, you know, and right. I don't think it's going to be far off when we see people sweetening things with agave nectar, just because how much purer it is. And that is a great way to relate back to agave and kind of unveil the magic behind this plant.
Have you guys...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, have you guys ever considered making an agave nectar, like a branded?
Absolutely. We, I guess it's all part of a strategy, you know, and you have to position yourself first with something. And so we knew that our flagship was going to be Riazul Tequila, just because how good the product we believe it is and the great response that's been having. But after that, a lot of things will probably stem from that. And one of them will probably most likely be an agave fructose, you know, as well as potentially an agave liqueur as well, which I don't know if you had the chance to taste them, but
no.
Puts Bailey's to sleep.
Oh, really?
If you ask my opinion.
I live in New Hampshire, so we have a state run liquor. And so the selection isn't necessarily, it's not bad, but it's very constant. So anywhere I go, I'm going to find the same thing. If they don't have it,
right.
It's not like
so
I can really special
state.
Order.
It's a yeah. control state then.
Exactly.
I
but I live see. 10 minutes over the, 10 minutes from Massachusetts where I'll go to special order any products that I need to get, like maraschino liqueur or any of these other things I can't find.
Got it.
So do you, that kind of, the agave thing was kind of translates into what I've been doing is with my margaritas, I always use an agave nectar. And then what I've done is I've actually used, I did a hot toddy, which I can't remember the recipe off the top of my head, but it's more of a warm drink and it calls for honey. And I tried it with honey and then the agave nectar. And I found that the agave nectar was much more approachable because it didn't give you that super sweet, like sickening stomach feeling. Like you can consume more of it and you feel like it's not necessarily got medicine properties to it, but it's just a easier flowing, smoother substance.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And that I think relates to the fact that it's a fructose. You know, I mean, I'm not a big chemist or anything, but I know that it when you're comparing like refined stuff to fructose, you get that impression, you know, that the sweetness is not overimposing and overwhelming to where it kind of forms like a rich sensation in your mouth. You're absolutely right.
Right. Now, how long does it take for, like you said, it takes 8 years to mature the agave plant for harvesting?
There's two maturations of the plant. The first one being the blossoming of the flower, which is a quiote, which is like a root that grows from the heart of the plant vertically, just straight up to the sky. And you better make sure to get rid of that or else it's going to suck up all the nutrients from the piña, which is where the nectar is contained, which you eventually get out to get to process and get tequila.
Right.
So that's the first maturation when the blossoming of the flower happens. The second one, and which not every tequila producer waits for the harvesting, is what I call the agro-industrial maturation. And the difference is the level of bricks. You know, the plant is more mature. It's like when the pineapple is ripe. You know, it's it's soggier, the color changes, and it's juicier.
Right.
It's the same deal. I mean, if you're harvesting agave plants that are not at their agro-industrial maturation phase, you're not going to get as much agave fructose properties as you would otherwise. And so that's why I say that there's two maturations, being the agro-industrial or at 8 years, if you will, the one you want to wait before you harvest the agave, because it's the one where the plant or the heart of the plant is a lot richer.
And why would somebody not wait? Is it just a price? Is it come down to price and speed of production?
Yeah, it's an opportunity cost. I mean, you have all these brands moving so much product, I mean, and their supply being a little bit thin, so they go through that route and start harvesting or quemando plants that are not fully mature, which is obviously something that at Riazul, we put our mark on that, you know, because we want to be known as a smaller firm committed with quality and consistency throughout the way. And I made sure to have solid supply chain before even embarking or venturing into launching my own brand.
How long did it take you to, from the website, it says that you acquired the farm, the agave, where the agave is harvested in around 2000. Is that right?
Well, what happened is that I inherited a piece of land.
Okay.
That land has been in the family for generations. And it was passed on to me after I kind of vouched for it when I asked the family if they would allow for me to plant agave in those fields. Because one of the blessings that this project has is that those lands fell within the tequila denomination of origin.
Yeah, you that's know? Important.
Because it's crucial. Right. I mean, if you're out of the denomination, you cannot call it tequila. I mean, you have Sotol from Chihuahua, you have Spirit of Agave from South Africa, which are very similar, but the brand tequila is a patrimony. It's an icon that dates back hundreds and hundreds of years, you know?
Right.
And as I said, so I inherited that piece of land back in 2000, a little bit before that. I got the certification from the soil, from the Consejo Regulador de Tequila. They do their evaluations and they tell you if the soil is prone for the agave cultivation and growing.
Is this
and
the so CRT that's on the back of the next to the NOM?
Absolutely.
Okay.
This is a CRT. That stands for Consejo Regulador de Tequila, and it's the institution that basically puts their stamp after they made a pretty comprehensive evaluation of your product. They go in your plant when the product is sitting on the tank before it's bottled. They run their tests to make sure that you fall within the norm, and they approve it, and then you can bottle it and ship it and sell it wherever you want to sell it.
Okay.
So I inherited this piece of land, planted my first agave back in 1999, and harvested the first little batch last year, but we'll get into more of a more serious harvesting this year. So that's pretty much how it all started. I met a wonderful individual along the way, in the name of Mario Moreno, who worked for Cuervo for like 25 years and oversaw millions and millions of the Rojeña plantation, which nurtures most of their tequila brands.
Right.
And I got associated with this guy that he is pretty much the mastermind behind the care and the procurement of all our plantations, and brings also a wealth of connections, which at the end allowed for us to work with one of the top distilleries in the countries who makes Riazul tequila, and also, as I said, make sure that we have an unlimited or close to an unlimited supply of high-quality agave.
Now, were you at all nervous when, I mean, you waited a long time from the initial planting until you were able to actually see how it was going to come out? I mean, was there any nerves, or did you feel like you had done all the right things and you weren't really worried?
You can measure the sugar breaks along the way, and you can add nutrients or take away nutrients. So you can see, it's not like you throw it in the soil and then you wait the 8 years and see what happens. It's important to give it the proper care. It's a very hardy plant to where it does not need constant watering or irrigation systems. It's a succulent plant, so it sucks the water in from the rainy season, and it auto-administers the water throughout the year. And so it's always, it gives you a little there's a little nervousness, you know, to, because you never know really what's going to happen at the end, but you can see the and correct me if my pronunciation is wrong, but the vigor, how vigorous the plant is and the colors. And so by that, you can tell a lot of the plant itself, you know, and the piña's color and all that, to where the sap is held or the nectar is held. And as I said, this guy is a professional and he constantly runs tests to where he is measuring the level of agave sugar in the plant, and he can tweak stuff that he applies in the sense of nurturing agents to make sure that when we harvest these plants, they have the highest level of agave fructose.
So you didn't, this wasn't a mistake. You had a guy that had a lot of experience going into this. So although the brand might be new, the years of experience that went into getting to this stage in his career, if you will, has got him to the point where he could say, look, this is what we need to do. This is how we're going to be successful.
You know what? That's a great point. And from now on, instead of saying that this brand has 3 years in the making, I'm going to say it has more like 25 years in the making. Because you're absolutely right. We have to weigh in Mario's experience, because if we didn't, the agave would not hold the qualities that it has. And therefore, we would not have the quality product that we can offer.
Right. If I was to go out and do it, I'm guarantee you nobody's going to like your brand. Like, if that's just, I would have no, I can read a textbook, right? And I can get advice. But you have to, throughout those 20 plus years, you have to make some mistakes and learn along the way. And that's kind of your foundation. And if you don't have that, then you're basically, if it comes out good, then it's going to come out to be like the other 30 brands in the shelves. But you're looking for something that's above good, that's great and memorable. And I think
absolutely.
That only comes with years, you know. Years.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. And I guess the word to describe all that is unique, you know, more because you got pretty good brands out there. But I think that what makes Riazul's product stand out is a uniqueness in every single one of our products, which is really what's captivating people's palates.
Now, what is the, I have it written someplace, I know I do, but what is the Riazul, the price points for the silver and the añejo?
The retail price point for the silver ranges from around 42 to 46.
Okay.
And the añejo ranges from 52 to like 56.
So it's still a little less, I think, than some of the other brands. I mean, obviously, you blow away Patron in price point. And even for añejo, I don't think Patron is known for that, but there's other brands out there, and a lot of the ones that have, I would say, the same taste properties, or at least close in that. You know, you're not going to have somebody who has the exact same añejo. That just wouldn't make sense. The recipes are different, and everybody has their own tastes. But you're still $5 to $10 less than some of the other brands out there, like I can name, like a Partida, which, in my opinion, has a great añejo as well. But when it comes to consumers going to the store and picking out something that's going to be really great, top shelf, I'd rather spend less. I can get more.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you compared us to Partida, but we really get compared to like 1942, which is $120 a bottle.
The Don Julio?
The Julio 1942, yeah. Or the Casa Noble, which is more in the 90, 100 ballpark.
Right.
And yeah, go ahead.
And mainly that would be because as the, I would call myself the everyday common consumer, although I've grown out of that a little bit. I understand what I can personally afford as an individual, and I've not had that because I wouldn't be able to appreciate that because I couldn't appreciate the cost I'd be laying down for 1942.
Right.
So if I can get that same experience with $40, $50 tequila, then there's no question. I mean, it's not even a comparison.
And that's one of our propositions, Derek. I mean, we really stand behind the word value, and especially in these times, you know, people are looking for innovation, for reinvention, if you will, and Riazul fits that profile. You know, I mean, we really went out of our way in designing and aligning and putting everything together to come up with this product that, as I said, is compared to $100 worth tequila at half the price, you know, and that is a great value for your money.
And I would actually go further and compare it to $100, $120 bottle of cognac, brandy, or bourbon, or whiskeys, or like an Irish or Scotch. because it still holds the same different properties, but the same complexities of a, you know, 15-year-old or 20-year-old whiskey or scotch, but you're getting half the age.
You're absolutely right. I want to say we've been converting, but a lot of scotch drinkers and cognac sippers have definitely came forward and say that they can see themselves substituting their drinking, not all the time, but a couple of times a week maybe, for our tequila, just because we are tapping in that realm or whatever as well, as you correctly mentioned.
Now, how big is your company as like like how many people do you have working for the Riazul branding?
As of today, we have 3 full-time employees in Mexico, and we have about, I want to say, 5 people working here in the United States. So we're about a team of 8 people right now.
Wow, that's...
Mexico pretty much handles the operations. I oversee that, obviously. And in the U.S., we're more focused, obviously, on the marketing and the branding and the sales and all the administration of the business. So
you're pretty streamlined then. You're working on a small crew, probably got 100 miles an hour, you know, keeping everything moving along.
120 miles an hour.
That's great. Now, okay, well then I noticed, like, for instance, I found you through Twitter. And
yep.
I noticed that I also joined your Facebook fan page, and
thank you.
You're smoking me, and my fan page is like 60 people. How do you see the future for marketing these type of brands? Like, say you did put out an agave nectar, or I don't know, a mezcal, or you just did something completely different. Are you foreseeing a lot of momentum with the social networking and using? Basically, you're winning on a person by person basis. You're not just blasting out to everybody, right?
Right.
You're tackling each person and making them a fan of your brand one by one. Has that been difficult, or do you see that as a way to win out against a lot of the large marketing brands?
Yes, I guess your assessment is correct. I mean, we really, many of these big players rely on big budgets, you know, and they throw huge marketing campaigns. Which at the end, I don't know if that creates accretion or dilution, because having your brand in so many places at the same time and catering to all these different demographics, I mean, it lacks identity, you know? And so I guess that in a way we are blessed to where I think that we have a good enough product where we can engage consumers one by one and have them experience the whole Riazul atmosphere, you know?
Right,
and that has really made us win their loyalty. I have people who honestly say that they don't put any other tequila in their personal bar after they've tasted ours. You know, and other people who shoot me tweets saying that they can't wait to get back home and just pour a little bit of their añejo on the rocks and just sip to it and let the worries of the day slip by, you know, stuff like that. That is really a result of us really working the pavement, getting out there, doing promotions, engaging with the consumer, and sharing not only the product but our story as well. You know, because there is a lot of substance behind this brand, and it is with pride that we like to share it, because that, if anything, lets the people experience more of the brand and could triggers loyalty. Going back to your question or your comment about social marketing, I guess right now it's more of a must rather than how much value are you getting out of it. It's hard for us to gauge the sales that stem from this. And I guess it's too early to call and to say that social media is just the way to go in relationship to branding and positioning a brand like ours. But it's more of a must, you know, and a must where people are more educated and there's much more out there of anything, of everything. And if you want to make a statement and you really want to reach them on their emotional side, I mean, Facebook and Twitter and all these social marketing media tools are just a necessity. You know, they're not a luxury anymore. They're a necessity.
Right.
And so for us, it's really unproven right now, the true value. But I'm telling you that all these connections that we've made and all this positive press and impressions and feedback has stemmed and come from the social marketing edge that we're trying to give this company.
And now when you say it's a requirement, is that the way, like as a, would you classify yourself as like a startup company or?
Absolutely. Absolutely startup.
So there's the money, the investment, the upfront investment in marketing. I know with PR firms or, you know, you could be talking $20,000 a month to keep somebody just blasting your press releases and, you know, sending out all this information. So you guys specifically are handling all that on your own, right? Like you came to me, you're the one who put the bottle in the box and shipped it to me for sampling. Like there's no other agency that does this for you.
We are working with a marketing / branding agency, if you will.
Okay.
To where they have provided a great asset, a great resource in a guy who devotes himself to PR and has great connections. You probably heard of him. His name is Petri Darby.
I think it sounds, the first name sounds familiar actually.
Yeah, he's all following us on obviously Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. And as I said, I mean, if you got the tools and you're not just an image, you can use PR in your advantage.
Right.
You know, because if you just have a nice bottle with a crappy product, well, my advice to you would be go out there, raise a ton of dollars and just invest in a marketing campaign. Hope that it sticks, you know, and that it – but our challenges, our commitments – our strategy is a lot different because we not only believe in what we have, we've seen people believe in it and they make it their own. And that's just the best way to achieve a branding success, you know?
Right. You have your own agave or your own land, which is, that's more unique towards a branding today, right? As other people would be pulling in the agave from who knows where. Like, is there an advantage to having your own? I mean, if you're making your own product and you actually can control your own source, does that give you some new distinct advantages? Like, do you exploit that?
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, like in any other business, the fact that to be integrated vertically down to the soil gives us a huge advantage because we're always going to be in control of the quality and consistency. There's a numerous... there's so many brands out there right now that are jumping on tequila because it's a hot item and just making a call to one of the thousands of distilleries that there are out there, you know, and saying, hey, I want good tequila, ship it over. But right. These guys are doing this with not only them, but with 20 other people who are placing the same call. You know, at some point, the consistency and the quality is going to dwindle because there is some pressure on the agave industry itself right now because of the whole issue of denomination of origin and the supply, given that tequila is having an explosive demand right now. And so for our particular case to be integrated and to have so much control over something so particular and unique, which is Riazul, if we were a mainstream brand and just a normal $20, $25 tequila, maybe it would be different, but for us, it's so important to maintain the consistency and quality that I could not even think about this project being one without us owning the agave fields, you know?
Yeah.
So it's paramount. I mean, it's, as I said, for our objective, for our business goal, it's paramount. I mean, it's one of the most important things to be integrated down to where we have control, not only of the plants, but of the distillation and the manufacturing process itself, which one of our three employees in Mexico is a maestro tequilero, which he is obviously the responsible person for the recipe. And I mean, pretty much when tequila Riazul is being bottled in this distillery, which is a third party distillery because we don't own it,
right?
They shut it down. Basically, it's our people in there, you know, because it's a trade secret. It's our stuff in there, and so this. This is paramount, especially if I mean, I know you understand this, but when I talk to people about this, Riazul is not only, the aroma is unbelievable in the añejo, but the taste as well, you know, and you're going to turn people over to this quality drink, and you want to make sure that you deliver 5 and 10 years from now. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right. And especially with the consistency, which if you have your own, if you're doing everything from the soil up, you're going to get your consistency, which I think is by far the most, you're young, so it's easy to get the consistency. It's easy for me to see that it's going to be consistent, but 10 years down the road, the way I look at it is like the American beer history, where the reason Budweiser is the king of beers is because it doesn't matter if you like it or not, it always comes out the same, and people want and expect something to be the same every time. If I buy a bottle, I want to buy a Riesel bottle now in Añejo, and then maybe in 3 years, because maybe I'm out because I drank it all. I want that the same experience every time.
You're absolutely right. I mean, what if it so happens that 2 years from now you get a visit from a friend of yours in Australia, okay? And Riesel is not in Australia yet. Hopefully it will be, but you know, and you want to share this experience of this tequila that turn your head and said, wow, this is something different. You know, this is something that I want to share with this guy. What happens if you open that bottle, you taste it, and it's not the same stuff?
Right.
You're going to be extremely disappointed. We already raised the bar really high with this product, you know, and the value that we are generating. So we got to make sure to withstand and keep this value for the ages to come. It's going to be a challenge. As I told you, the agave industry is going through a lot of pressure. But 10 years from now, with the expected demand of Riesel, I mean, we're oversupplied in the agave side. I mean, we have access to more than 1.6 million healthy and top-of-the-line agave plants. So I'm not really concerned.
Right. Now, well, that actually now this is maybe for people. I'm one of these people that don't understand necessarily how long can I keep this bottle. Like, if I have the bottle unopened, or maybe I have it opened, is it gonna stay exactly the same throughout a 5 year span if I was to put it in, you know, on a shelf or something away from the light?
Should. If it's gonna be away from the light and away from heat, absolutely. I mean, it should last forever.
So would you? Would you put it in the same place you might put your, like, is it better to put it in a cooler area like a wine?
Not necessarily. I mean, depending how much time you want to maintain the exact flavors and profile. But I would say that if it's a year, no, just room temperature, away from the sun, because obviously the alcohol vapors are going to fume away. And so that's going to take out some of the properties that the tequila holds today. But if you keep it at room temperature, away from the sun, in a year or so, you shouldn't be concerned at all.
So I would be able to stockpile if I had to. Like, for some reason, if I was worried, you'd be able to keep it around for a bit of time.
Absolutely.
Now, where you had mentioned that you're not in Australia. Where are you? Where would you be able to buy the Riesel brand today?
Well, believe it or not, today, just in Texas and Illinois.
Okay.
However, tomorrow is a different story. We are signing distributorship agreements within the United States in New York, California, and Florida very soon.
Okay.
And outside of the United States, Mexico, for obvious reasons, we're going to start introducing Riesel there in Mexico. And we're already very close to signing some agreements with people in Asia.
Oh, cool.
And in South America. So Riesel is making even being a startup company, not even a year of being launched, I guess, as you were commenting before, those 20 plus years of experience are really weighing in, and people are really appreciating what they're seeing, and we're getting interest from all parts of the world to distribute our stuff.
Now, can you be found everywhere? Like, I can't remember the name of the stores in Texas that carry it. Is it not ABC? That's North Carolina. Can't remember. There's a couple big major ones I noticed in Austin and Dallas and areas that carry different tequilas from some of the vendors I've been dealing with that are also right now kind of in Texas and working their way out. Is it available generally throughout Texas?
Yes. Well, no, I take that back. Mostly right now in the bigger cities.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's why.
As you said, like Austin, Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio mainly. And I mean, that's, I don't want to say a disadvantage, because there are many advantages of working with smaller distributors. because you can keep a much tighter relationship. But just like any other startup company, we got to work our way up. And whenever we do land a contract with a bigger distributor that has more resources and is better established and has more reach, we will make it available in many more places, not only in Texas, but in other states within the country. But as of now, since we are working with smaller distributors to make a name for ourselves and set up a foundation to be able to go out there and expand our networks, well, I mean, we're starting small, you know, but small sometimes is better because you're more in control of everything. And as I said, given our conservative and our in-house marketing approach, this has been the way that we been going and the way that I think we want to go for the next couple of years.
Right. And you can basically control your own destiny because you obviously, I mean, it's obvious that the product is not, there's no, you don't have to trick anybody, right? It's all about getting it in front of the people and having them taste
exactly.
It. And like,
for, exactly.
Like the first off, the Blanco or the, so do you guys use Blanco or silver? It's so approachable. Like I have both of them right here. And there's no alcoholic aftertaste. Like the balance is right on par. So you're not getting any, you're getting flavor profile and you're getting a finish, but you're not getting, it's a very clean finish and it goes, I don't know, the flavors flow, but you don't get that explosive alcohol at the end, like right at the end of the finish, the heat.
Right.
And I think that's a big deal. To me, that's a big deal because most people I know are expecting that. And when they don't get that, they get something completely different.
You're absolutely right. And that's, as I said, that's part of the uniqueness and the care and the understanding of what we believe is going to be what the market is going to want in the short term, you know, or even now. We were very careful to give those blends or just keep those blends level to where we did not overimpose or just give that the people the bite, you know, that bite that kills them and shifting towards a more smooth, believe it or not, some people have been calling our añejo holy smoothness, which really makes me laugh, but they have. I mean, just because they close their eyes and they're expecting for that big bite, you know, when I tell them it's smooth, they're thinking of smooth, but not like a cognac smooth, if you will.
Right.
You know, and we were very careful because we understand that that progression, that shift in consumer trend is taking place. And people are really liking that.
And it's got the cognac, or maybe it's either cognac or whiskey nose to it. Like the bouquet is got, just putting my nose into it, you get that, the sense of what probably is coming out of some of the oak, the barrels you're using. It has an initial presentation of maybe a sweeter whiskey or bourbon or something. And it almost shows off, look, I can compete with these guys at the level of flavor profile right off. Like it starts that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess the first thing that, as I said, sets us apart and kind of allows for us even to compete with these high quality beverages, just like single malts on cognacs, is the fact that our barrel selection, you know, the liquid itself, the flexibility in the making of the liquid through the different distillation processes, and the aging factor, you know, and because tequila is truly a very fine and refined product itself, and you have the resources out there and the tools to give it that feel and give it that sensation. So I guess you're not completely out of line here when you say that we are also competing with the fine scotches and the fine cognacs out there, because truly that's what our añejo truly represents. So absolutely.
But it does, the thing with the añejo with multiple brands I've seen is not only does it compete, but it doesn't command the price that these, maybe it's just society or history or whatnot, that you have to pay a lot of money for a good scotch. You're looking at $150 or sometimes $300 for a bottle of really high-end scotch when you get that same experience. Like you said, just sit back and let your day just, you know, the troubles go away. You get that same ability out of this, but you're also the trouble of saying, wow, I just spent $300 for this. That's a little insane. that's not there. So that's obviously, in my opinion, part of the experience isn't just the flavors, the profiles, the noses, and the viscosity, but it's also, do I feel ripped off that I, you know, did I treat myself way too much? Can I pay my mortgage next month? I don't have that problem.
You're absolutely right. I guess you bring on another wary, because now you have to pay the bill because you pay that pretty steep bottle. You're absolutely right. And that goes back to the value factor that we're talking about, to where we don't think that the consumer needs to pay $100 fee to get themselves the tequila like ours, which is, as I said, constantly compared to $100 tequila. So yes, you're absolutely right. And I hope you don't feel that Riazul, we're ripping people off with our price points.
No, because it's, to me, I'll buy a, you know, a $50, mid $50 product if I'm going to get a lot of, first off, it's gotta have a scent to it. Like even, for instance, and I hate to always go back to Patron and rag on them, but they don't have a scent. There's nothing in the nose. There's nothing. So to some people, they like that because they don't feel like it's going to be disgusting. If it's almost like the vodka of tequilas, where in my opinion, I want some sort of scents, even to my clear liquids. You know, I want to have the full experience, and I'm willing to pay for the full experience if I feel that it was a fun time. And I'm not going to go through a bottle of añejo in an hour, right? So I could have a bottle of añejo, or I can go to the movies with my kids. They're the same price. So there's a lot of different balances that you can make and go, look, this is a pretty good value. You know, I'm getting a lot for it, and it stays around with me longer.
I absolutely agree with you.
And the other thing that's kind of neat is, and I haven't seen a lot in the añejos in general, was that, I know it's like a chocolatey black pepper thing. I don't get that in a lot of different brands, and not like a chocolate martini per se, or an infused chocolate, but just the hints of it. That if you mention it, then somebody might pick it up, but they have to really look for it. It's almost a game.
Sure. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and that's kind of the beauty of our product, and where there's only hints of things, you know?
Right, you don't want everything to punch you right in the face with if you tell the whole story in the first sip, then that's no fun.
Exactly, and so we leave it so, I mean, it's about what the people feel and can gather from it, other than us telling them exactly what the techniques, you know, were for us to make sure that we spiked up a couple of scents and stuff like that. It's more of letting them explore and just drift away and flow freely and really just capture whatever their palate or that moment is telling them. You know, it's awesome for people to come back and tell me, oh, I sense a little cinnamon here and butterscotch, and for me to know that there's nothing like that in it, you
right.
know. But it's just like, I mean, yes, you can relate back to the cognac and the brandy barrels and all this stuff just blending in and obviously impacting our stuff. But truly, it's just like people's imaginations relating to whatever they want to relate. And that's fabulous, you know, because that makes them kind of hold on to it longer, as you said. And it's going to definitely turn into loyalty for us, which is what we want.
And I think it was you or one of your associates who said, you get fruit? You're tasting like a fruit? And I was like, yeah, I kind of am. Like, like with the Blanco, I'm getting a little overripe pineapple skin. Like my family, I have two kids, and I'm always buying fruits and, you know, just mangoes, pineapples, fresh fruits, because they love fruit. And I would rather, and I didn't get this experience as a kid as much, but to give them experience of all the different flavors that you can get out of different fruits and different vegetables, that you get a bigger appreciation for this. And then when you get to the stage where you're picking out these fruits and these flavors, I got overripe pineapple skin. I don't know why. It just, that was something I picked out of it. Maybe it's my imagination playing, or maybe I've had a lot of, you know, I always forget to cut my pineapple, so they didn't get overripe. And maybe that's just something I picked out of it. But it's sort of like if you drink it and you think overripe pineapple skin, where did that come from? I don't know. It must be there. Why would my brain have done that?
Right, right. That's awesome. That's really cool. And just so you know, that floralness that you're picking up is actually the agave essence that comes from the high level of the agave fructose that our products have. You know, and this is what I try to tell people over and over again when they taste the silver, because if you compare our silver to every other silver out there, I mean, there's many, as you said, every different tequilas, they have their their profiles and their recipes are different, blah, blah, blah. But in a true Blanco, in a true silver, you need to be able to get past any tastes, any odor, any scents, any properties other than the agave essence, because it's not aged. So if it has it in there, you should be able to sense it, you know. Right. And that agave, that pineapple peel, believe it or not, is very close to the floralness of agave. So that's, I believe that that's where that's coming from. So you're not crazy.
Okay. I just make it short, because maybe I was just inventing stuff off, you know, I come up with some crazy analogies every now and then, but that was, you know, just the envisionment I've got of that pineapple, like, oh, I probably should have cut this like last week. it's getting a little soft.
Right.
But again, that kind of, it's the creativeness where I can sit down with, like, I happen to have a lot of friends who are big into tequila, like hardcore. And, you know, their idea of a margarita is tequila and ice, right? And they're done. And so I'm like, well, I kind of like a little Grand Marnier or Tuaca and a little agave nectar in there. And
nice.
They're like, oh,
nice.
Yeah, well, I just kind of just drink my tequila. I'm like, so you're just drinking tequila on the rocks? Well, yeah, but it's like a margarita. I'm like, okay, well, that's, you know, that is that level of their dedication. And for them to, you know, be able to get this up in this region eventually, I think you'll get those style of people. And one of the things I had noticed was missing out of these, and I know you're going to, this is going to be fixed, and I understand your startup, is the reposado.
Right.
Where I am, the silver for me is, I don't want to say, my original impression was silvers are mix and the añejo is sipping. I find that there's, and I have friends who think silver is good for sipping. If you have a good silver, it's great for sipping. You don't need to mix it.
I love to sip on silver. I mean, and on the rocks, it blows. It's just so many different notes come out with the contact with ice, because ice does a fabulous job in capturing kind of some of the properties.
Okay.
Like the alcohol properties. And so if you want to run this test, I mean, I find it sweeter, and just, I don't know what it is, but the ice does a fabulous job in kind of masking out these things that it has and bringing out other things. So do that test and tell me what you think.
So it's almost like, to get almost two different recipes per se, you would have it with both. You could do maybe one day you're looking for something a little stronger, a little different. You go without ice, and then, you know, neat. And then maybe the next day you're like, you know what? I want to experience something a little different than yesterday. Throw some ice in there. Let it chill out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I invite you to do that, because it's really amazing.
And for the añejo, that's, I don't know if I've tried, I've seen other people, there are recipes for mixing añejo in cocktails, and I have no problem with that. The problem I have with it comes to price. Even at $52 to $56, I would rather appreciate it straight, but, you know, some people might mix it. I just feel like, oh, 2 ounces in my cocktail when I could just use the silver for a little less, and it just, mentally, I'd rather have my cocktail with the cheaper, the same brand, but the cheaper of the brands in cost, not in quality. But
yeah, I perceive mixing the añejo as a crime, but I mean, you can't impose. I mean, people, if they want to mix it and get an amazing mixed drink and like a coffee martini, because I have that. I've had that, a coffee tequilini, if you will.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it really is amazing. I had my friends over at Coffee Grounds. I don't know if you know J.R. Cohen.
No.
He's huge on social marketing. He does a fantastic job of bringing like all these Twitter people and, you know, and Facebook together. And he has a very nice venue, which they serve like paninis, but they're most, like, they do coffees, but exotic combinations with ice, and they prepared a coffee tequilini with Riazul Añejo, and it was amazing. I mean, I can send you the recipe if you want, because it was amazing.
That would be cool. I'm a huge, I've always been into coffee, and so I don't have that many coffee recipes, and unfortunately right now it's been a little warm. I'm probably more for you guys than me. It's almost like 70 up here.
Right.
I enjoy mainly a coffee at night after dinner if I have some friends over, because we have some poker games, and because I happen to, you know, do this alcohol review thing, I get like 5 bottles a week, right? So I just have alcohol that just, it's like a party all the time. And so, you know, I like to bring even brands that I can't necessarily get up here, people still appreciate it and they want to come over again, right? So even having the Riazul and saying, look, try this, you're almost looked at as, hey, I got to go back over his house, right? You're the popular guy. And so for me, the Añejo, I like to have that out and say, look, I want you to sip this and then sip these other ones and tell me which one you like. And we play little games with it. But in my personal, I don't know, maybe it's just me, I tend to lean towards the Reposado. My wife is all about the silver because she's not into the, and she likes the Riazul and any brands that don't bring the alcohol attack because she's not into the alcohol thing. So
yeah, I'm sure.
It's a flavor. So in like a margarita or whatnot, she would like the silver. Añejo for sipping, I like to put the Reposados in my cocktails because it brings a little extra kick, a little extra agave into the mix. But you guys, when I had talked, I can't remember one of your associates when I talked to them said that the Reposado was on its way, but you saw it as we need our premium product is our Añejo, but there's all these people who still, you know, a large majority of the market that does cocktails, and they're going to want that silver.
Well, let me take that back. I would never say that our premium product is our Añejo. I mean, our premium is just what you want to drink. You know,
we put
the same effort, care, and dedication to each one of our products. The thing is that they have different profiles because one is aged and the other one is not aged, you know? And you'll discover that with our Reposado, we gave it a totally different profile, which I'm sure people are going to just jump over it because it has hints of citrusy properties in it, which just make for a fabulous whatever it is, sipping, mixing, shooting, or putting on ice. I mean, our Reposado is really going to be amazing. It comes out in about a month and a half.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully, because I've been putting a lot of pressure on my guys down there. Yeah, but I mean, we had some things we had to go through with the packaging and all that, which is finalized, thank God. And now we have to figure out some operational things. But our Reposado is going to bring uniqueness to the table that our Reposado hasn't done yet. And I think that that's going to be amazing when it comes out, when it's ready.
So do you predict that price to be someplace in between the silver and the Añejo?
Yeah, most likely. I mean, it's just how it works, you know. I mean, the latter. So we will definitely price it. I don't know if it's going to fall exactly in between, but around there somewhere.
Yeah, it's tough to price these things too because every state's going to have their own tax system, and you don't know what you're actually going to pay until you get to the store.
Exactly.
I guess the last thing I just want to touch on was do you. It's kind of started this way too. Do you have any? Does anybody ever question the ideas of 100% the agave when you go out and you're showing people these? Do they understand? Is it common understanding now of what 100% the agave means?
No, unfortunately, it's not, and they use it as a cliche, if you will, because they hear it and they want to just make sure that it is. But they really don't understand what it means, unfortunately. Uh-huh. And that's what we're trying to achieve. I mean, because I get it a lot of times. I mean, I don't want to pick on people, but people ask me, is it 100% agave? And I'm like, what if I told you no? What difference does that make?
That's true.
And they would say, well, that makes it not so good. I'm like, but why? So, again, I'm not trying to be dumb or anything or just to pick on people, but I'm glad that at least they identify one of the main characteristics that a tequila has to have for it to be a tequila itself, you know, because really that was a government move trying to cover a lack of supply, if you will, by allowing the denomination of 51%. But people are getting there. People are slowly but learning a little bit more about tequila. And some of them do what actually 100% agave means, but some of them, as I said, they use it as a cliche because they hear it all the time and they associate that with tequila not being as high quality, which in turn is right. But when you ask them what it is, they really don't know what it is.
They
not
just
all
know.
Of them.
They just,
but
they,
that's
they
what we're
the,
here for.
They get the message. They just didn't get the definition.
Exactly.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that I guess that's one of the advantages of being the startup where, in my opinion, the people who come out and want to brand their own product and tell people why it's so great is to put out either seminars or training or tastings and say, look, just taste it. And you'll understand rather than just reading the marketing speak and I also noticed you don't have ultra premium on your bottle. It just says premium.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. We are definitely on that track. I mean, we're trying to do a lot of dinners, you know, tequila dinners, to where I am the first party interested in just going out there and educating people because they're ready for this. You know, they're ready to get educated. Just they have not found the right tools or the right people to educate them. But that's kind of what we are trying to do, to let people know what the difference are in such a subtle a beverage, you know, such a different and complex beverage that tequila is these days. So that's kind of our commitment to the world, if you will.
That's cool. And I guess the last question, what would you pair with the Riazul for a food, like either before or after?
Well, with the silver, definitely a ceviche.
Okay.
You know, if you're having like a little opener, like an aperitif motif, if you will, with a silver, having it either neat or on the rocks, I would definitely have a ceviche. And fish goes great with because the añejo is more of an after dinner, if you will.
Right.
That's more of a sipping, to me, dessert-y type of after dinner drink. Or not dessert-y, but just kind of after dinner. But if you want to accompany it with a dish, I would definitely pair it up with a dessert. And just tequila, I think, goes better with seafood, you know?
Yeah.
And tequila has been glazing all sorts of different dishes with fish. And it has been added to ceviche dressings and all sorts of things. And so when I think ceviche, I cannot think not having a Riazul silver. You know, when I'm having a good dessert or maybe even, maybe a mole, but this is very Mexican. I don't even know if you know what mole is.
No.
Which it's salty, but it's made out of chocolate.
Oh.
It's like a spread for enchiladas, if you will.
Oh, cool.
And it's fantastic. And I could envision having some añejo together with this, just because, yes, it is salty, but it has that cacao, that cocoa properties, the chocolate properties to it, you know. But nevertheless, I think that tequila is better paired up with seafood and fish.
Excellent. All right, I don't want to take too much more of your time. I know you guys are 150 miles an hour.
That's right.
Thanks for coming on the show, and we'll, you know, I'll get this out hopefully at the end of this week. I'll get the splice, the editing in at the beginning and stuff, and really get it going. And I'll just blast out to everybody, because besides just the brand, knowing a little bit about the industry, the efforts that you go through, I think brings a bigger appreciation to the liquid itself.
And you know what, Derek, that's key. I mean, there's a lot of honest competition out there, and I know that I want to help the tequila industry. You know, of course, Riazul is my brand. But if tequila wins, I win, you know, and yeah, I mean, it's true. And so as much education and nuances I can give, not only about Riazul, but about tequila itself, I'm always going to do that, because it's a way that everybody within the industry is going to win, which is what we all want.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you for your time today.
All right, Derek, I my pleasure, and sorry we couldn't connect sooner. But as you said, we're 150 miles per hour, but we got it done, and we're here for future needs or whatever it is you want to share. Please don't hesitate to get in touch with us.
All right, and if anybody listening has any questions, you can send it to me, and I will forward, if I don't know the answers, I will forward them on, and we'll get this out on everydaydrinkers.com, and I'll send it to you guys, and we can put it on Twitter and social network it up and all the stuff that goes into this current generation of awesome technology.
Excellent.
All right.
Excellent. All right, sir. Thanks. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.